Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Katie reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, February 23rd, 2023. Fire at Terlingua CSD campus claims robotics and band building by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Terlingua. Just after midnight last Friday morning, a fire broke out at the Terlingua CSD campus. By the time the sun came up, the tiny school district's band and robotics building was rendered a total loss, as well as the personal belongings and equipment of the students in both programs. Dispatch was alerted at 1:51 a.m. Terlingua Fire and EMS, the Brewster County Sheriff's Department, and National Park Service fire crews responded quickly and helped prevent the blaze from also claiming the school library. Former Terlingua CSD teacher Nate Simons called 911, initially assuming that the blaze on the horizon was an out-of-control burn pile. In addition to contacting dispatch, he called the superintendent, Regan Reed, at home to start alerting school leadership. While waiting for the pros to show up, Simons rushed to the scene as the first responder. Armed with fire extinguishers from home, he did his best to contain the blaze from the outside, noting that the fire had already started to destabilize the building from below. It was purely a neighborly thing, he said of his split-second decision to assist. Simons stayed with the fire crews until around 3 a.m., and Superintendent Reed stayed through sunrise. As students and staff started waking up and getting ready for school, news gradually spread through the community about what had happened overnight. Junior Gigi Keenan found out about the fire from her dad. She thought he was running late to pick her up from school, so she gave him a call, and he told her the bad news. He'd just received word that school was canceled because of a fire that had broken out at the band and robotics building. "It was devastating," Keenan said. Some of Keenan's classmates had big-ticket items go missing. A guitarist lost a series of amps, and the percussionists lost two drum sets and a keyboard. Director Bradley Anthonet, who also serves as the school's robotics coach and IT specialist, lost a trombone he'd had since childhood. The fire also claimed Big Girl, a robot that the robotics students would have used for a regional competition in Lubbock. The robotics parts, playing field, and tools will all be replaced, but the students and Coach Anthony's hundreds of hours on design and coding cannot, the school wrote in a press release. Though Terlingua CSD students and staff were sad about all the hard work they'd put into their projects, the community quickly sprung into action to try to replace some of the lost equipment. The senior class helped coordinate plans to receive donations so that their classmates didn't miss a beat. Donations of guitars, drums, and other instruments started trickling in right away. "It makes sense because of what a tight-knit community we are, and especially because we're such a musical community," Keenan said. The robotics students, officially known as the Purobots, also received a helping hand. With just days on the clock, El Dorado High School in El Paso reached out to donate a robot that didn't qualify for the upcoming regional competition. "It'll be a busy couple of days, but they're rebuilding," said science teacher Marcy Reed. The cause of the fire is still under investigation, and the total cost of repairing and repurchasing equipment has yet to be determined. In the meantime, donations are welcome. Funds can be addressed to Terlingua Common School District. Note band, robotics, or both. and equipment can also be mailed or dropped off at the school. Terlingua CSD's mailing address is P.O. Box 256, Terlingua, Texas 79852. The district's physical address is 550 Roadrunner Circle, Terlingua, Texas 79852. First right after the Y intersection in Study Butte, just before Cottonwood General Store. Marfa ISD, now monitored by Armed School Resource Officer, by Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa Independent School District's newly hired School Resource Officer, SRO, took to his post on campus for the first time on Tuesday. The latest in a series of measures the district has put in place since a deadly mass school shooting in Uvalde spurred statewide calls to enhance school security. The officer, 21-year-old Ian Martinez, is a Marfa ISD graduate from the class of 2019, making him an already familiar presence to many on campus. He was sworn in at a Friday ceremony attended by school staff, city employees, and members of the Marfa Police Department. His mother, Lori Valerio, pinned his new badge to his uniform. Martinez is, in fact, a Marfa PD officer, as his badge indicates, and with that comes the power to enforce the law, but the role of an SRO is distinct. Martinez is also an employee of the school district, said Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez, who explained the SRO is commissioned through the police department and assigned to the school. Martinez's salary is funded jointly by the school district and the city of Marfa. The school district began discussing hiring an armed officer for the campus over the summer when fears prompted by the shooting at Uvalde's Robb Elementary School, which left 19 students dead, led board members to scrutinize their school's security. Since then, the campus has undergone a security audit focused on the campus exterior doors, ensuring they lock properly, and has installed 37 security cameras viewable by the Marfa Police Department. The idea of arming teachers was floated by board members. I just encourage you all to consider options for us so that we're no longer sitting ducks, MISD Junior High and High School Principal Luann Porter said in a June school board meeting. In a utopian world, we would be full of law enforcement 24/7, but that's not reality. Martinez's daily duties include roaming the school as a presence and to ensure doors stay locked and that students are not letting in unauthorized visitors. Because their jurisdiction is within a school campus, disciplinary matters will still fall under the purview of the school itself first, explained Marquez. And school resource officers may only become involved in enforcement if an incident rises to a level that would warrant the filing of criminal charges. A fight on campus, for example, would first be investigated internally by school officials who would bring in the SRO in the case of serious bodily injury. The school is a whole different entity, said Marquez. There's a lot of incidents the school would have to take care of first, under their policies, and if it reaches the point where it becomes a criminal act, they have an officer on scene. Martinez, who is armed with a gun and taser and equipped with handcuffs, explained he was on site as a presence to be called upon if needed. He said that he would break up a fight if he felt the situation was potentially dangerous to students, but ultimately, penalizing such an incident would fall to the school first. School-wise, there's some stuff the school has to handle themselves, but I'm here mainly as a presence, he said. If there's things that need to involve me, I will be involved. School resource officers are required to undergo an SRO-specific training, which Martinez will do in April. In the meantime, Chief Marquez, who has undergone the SRO training, is acting in a mentor role and would be called upon if an incident unfolded prior to the training. Martinez himself has undergone active shooter training. Marfa is hardly alone in its decision to bring an armed officer onto its school campus. The presence of school police departments on Texas campuses has surged since 2017. Calls to equip campuses with armed officers were renewed by elected officials in the wake of Uvalde. Both Fort Davis and Alpine School Districts have armed officers on campus. We have had school marshals since 2014, and we also use all options available for arming staff under the Guardian program, said Fort Davis ISD Superintendent Graydon Hicks. There are armed staff at both campuses and have been since 2014. Alpine ISD Superintendent Michelle Reinhardt said it employs three school resource officers provided by the Brewster County Sheriff's Department, one for each of the district's campuses. The matter of increasing police presence on school grounds is contentious. Research indicates the presence of police in schools does not increase safety, but may increase disciplinary actions. Chief Marquez said he believes the presence of an officer on campus, knowing someone is there to assist if needed, makes those attending school and parents at home feel a greater sense of safety. We all know of the school shootings and things like that, said Marquez. It's basically a way of easing the minds of the students and teachers and parents in the community, knowing someone's there. Five Marfa ISD students who spoke to the Big Bend Sentinel felt either neutral or positively about Martinez's presence. A lot of people think it's Marfa. Nothing could happen here, but it could happen in any school, said Senior Umi Shanez, who said Martinez's presence made her feel safer in case anything were to happen. Having a police officer on campus is definitely going to make parents feel safer and definitely makes the tight-knit community feel better about having their kids go to school, she continued. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. City of Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez, School Resource Officer Ian Martinez, and Marfa ISD Superintendent Oscar Aguero posed for a photo at a swearing-in ceremony for Martinez last week. May 6th, general election ballot preview. Candidates and a Groundwater District Proposition by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, the filing deadline for candidates and ballot propositions for the May 6th general election, which ended last week, saw a handful of candidates contending for local public office and the Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District seeking voter approval to become a taxing entity. Early voting for the May 6th general election begins Monday, April 24th, and runs until Tuesday, May 2nd. Marfa City Council. For Marfa City Council, the role of mayor, currently held by Manny Baeza, will be up for election, with Baeza filing to serve for another term, and Marfa resident Stephen Salgado Bolter running against the incumbent. Baeza served on City Council beginning in 2008, was first elected mayor in 2019, and ran unopposed for a second term in 2021. He said he decided to run for re-election in order to ensure the city's planned projects, including major street and sewer system repairs, as well as the completion of the new water well, come to fruition. We have put together a great team over the past few years that is dedicated to the community. I want to continue to support their efforts for improving our community, said Baeza of city staffers. Bolter said he had no comment at this time and plans to share more regarding his candidacy in the future. Two full-term council seats, currently held by Raul Lara and Irma Salgado, will be up for election. Incumbent Lara filed to run again, along with Marfa residents Krista Marquez and Travis Ackerman. Irma Salgado will not be seeking re-election. Voters will be instructed to choose two out of the three candidates on the ballot. When reached for comment, Lara provided a list of past city council accomplishments, which included initiatives to repair the city's streets, grants for 5 new police fleet vehicles, and EMS training for city departments. If reelected, it will be Lara's third term on council. Ackerman, who works in event production and stage management with New York-based company MJM Creative, said that after becoming aware that the city was struggling to attract candidates for the second election in a row, he felt compelled to run in the spirit of public service. "There are real challenges facing us out here in the high desert, and Marfans have the right to reliable, competent leadership," said Ackerman. "It is important for our elected leaders to come prepared to serve a full term, ready to address the very real concerns of its citizens and manage their tax dollars responsibly." Marquez, a realtor and the wife of City of Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez, has served in roles on the Marfa ISD School Board, the Marfa PTO, and the Marfa Education Foundation Board in the past, and said she was motivated to run for city council in order to continue to serve the community and represent Marfa's various citizens. "Through my experiences in educational and community leadership, I've gained the background needed to understand the deeper issues facing our community," said Marquez. An unexpired one-year term, left vacant by former council member Jason Ballman, who resigned this past fall, received one applicant, Mark Morrison, who is running unopposed and will likely be appointed. Morrison is self-employed in the construction business and operates a few long-term rentals in town with his partner, a physician with PCHS Clinic in Presidio and Marfa. "I decided to run for the remainder of the unexpired term to be of service to my community. I don't have an agenda or a pet cause," said Morrison. "I would like to serve the interests of the town in the necessary areas of budget, infrastructure, and the various policy and governance areas that have to be taken care of for a vibrant town." Marfa School Board. The Marfa School Board will have two trustee positions up for election in May, Place 1 and Place 2. Place 2 is currently held by Lori Flores, who filed for re-election. "I'm in it for the students," Flores said of her desire to continue to serve on the board. Place 1 has remained vacant since the resignation of previous board member Krista Marquez in July, and no one filed to run for the seat. The district will likely need to solicit letters of interest and appoint someone to serve on the board. Since Flores is running unopposed, she will likely be appointed and the district will not hold an election. Presidio City Council. Presidio City Council will see the position of mayor, currently held by John Ferguson, up for election, as well as two council member seats. Ferguson has served as the mayor of Presidio since 2013 and filed for re-election. He will be running against Angel Miguel Campos. Presidio continues to face challenges in the lack of opportunity, aging infrastructure, and general quality of life needs. Fortunately, there are many in our community who step up to address local concerns, and I count myself as one of them, said Ferguson. I would be more than happy to continue my work as mayor of our city for another term, if given the opportunity by voters. Council members Arian Velasquez Ornelas and Nancy Arevalo, whose terms will be up, have both filed for re-election. Presidio resident and realtor with Livingston Real Estate, Todd Beckett, has filed to run for city council as well. Arevalo, a longtime resident of Presidio, said the main reason she was running for re-election was because of her love of the community, adding that she felt it was her civic duty to have an active role in the local legislative process. If elected, I will be in pursuit of making good, sound decisions which will represent the community as a whole and not to appease a personal or a certain small group's agenda, said Arevalo. I will value and listen to everyone's different perspectives with respect and dignity. Beckett, Velasquez Ornelas, and Campos did not respond to requests for comment by press time. Presidio School Board. Over half of Presidio ISD's school board will be up for election, with the terms of Yvonne Spencer, Ethel Barriga, Hugo Ramos, and Fidel Baiza expiring in May. The superintendent's secretary, Elizabeth Melendez, did not respond to repeated requests for comment regarding candidates who filed to run for school board. The City of Presidio will hold a joint election with the Presidio Independent School District in May. Voting will likely take place at the Presidio Activity Center, PAC. Presidio County. There will be a proposition relating to the county's underground water conservation district on the May 6th general election ballot, in which voters will decide whether or not to allow the district to become a taxing entity. Since its creation in 1999, the district has operated from a budget from the county commissioners rather than levied their own tax. The move to make the Underground Water Conservation District its own independent taxing entity has been a matter of discussion for some time, after County Attorney Rod Pontone initially suggested the change in the summer of 2021. In the May election, voters will simply vote on whether to make the district a taxing entity rather than vote on a specific tax rate. According to state law, the district may levy a property tax not to exceed 5 cents per $100 of assessed property valuation. Trey Gerfers, general manager of the district, said the district will sit down with the Presidio County tax assessor collector and determine what to make tax rate in order to get the budget they need. The district's current annual budget is around $51,000, according to Gerfers. Its core expenses are for a Gerfers salary, $1,600 a month, dues, insurance, legal training, and more. The district has successfully received grants in the past and will continue to pursue grant funding and partnerships, said Gerfers. This fall, the county entered into an interlocal agreement with the district to offset a potential new tax by lowering their tax rate so that citizens would not be impacted, something Gerfers refers to as a tax swap that will not appear in the proposition language, but represents an agreement in place with the county. The county commissioners will reduce their tax rate to offset the district's tax rate, so that the property taxes won't go up for Presidio County taxpayers, explains Gerfers. If the proposition passes, the district will begin collecting taxes in 2024, but not have its own tax revenue stream until 2025, so it would be covered by the county until then. If the proposition fails to pass this election cycle, Gerfers said they will be able to put it up for a public vote once more, although the district is hoping the proposition will pass the first go-around. He said their work to monitor groundwater, understand groundwater resources, and permit accordingly to ensure the county does not run out of water is a vital service. I'm hopeful that people will see their own self-interest in this, and they'll understand that the tax rate swap will offset the tax burden of a new tax, and that they will vote for this, said Gerfers. But groundwater is just too important to allow our groundwater district to just dissolve because we're not able to operate unless we can assess a tax. In order to get the word out about the proposition and gain voter support, the district is planning a series of educational videos that will cover how groundwater works, Texas groundwater law, the history of Presidio County's groundwater district, and more, in part funded by the Dixon Water Foundation. It would just be a real shame if we lost this because people don't understand what's at stake, said Gerfers, because this is the best shot that we have of ensuring local control of the water and guaranteeing or giving ourselves the best shot at a prosperous future.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 23rd, 2023. FSISD Board Reorganization on the Horizon by Nathan Heuer. The Fort Stockton ISD School Board is set to have two new members by the conclusion of the upcoming May 6th election. Billy Espino, longtime board president, and Andy Rivera, current six-year board member of Ward 7, will not rerun for their elected seats later this year. ISD Superintendent Zamora explained that the next board president will be determined by the school board in the coming months or after the new members are sworn in. A reorganization of the board officers will most likely occur after the new board members come in and are sworn in, and the reason I say that is that they don't have to wait until then. If they want to reorganize right now, they can do it, because technically a board can reorganize at any time. The deadline to file an application for a place on the school board ballot was 5 p.m. on February 17th, and a total of four candidates completed the necessary paperwork. Three candidates will be vying for one seat in Ward 1, according to the website. The group includes Nathan Tapp, Kay Griffith, and Daniel Rangel. In Ward 7, Jennifer Gonzalez was the lone candidate to turn in a packet by deadline. According to viewable packet information, Gonzalez is an engineering specialist, oil and gas field inspector that has lived in Ward 7 boundaries for the past 5 years. Tapp is currently a consultant in the oil and gas industry and has lived in Ward 1 for the past 12 years. Griffith is a retired teacher that has lived in Ward 1 for the past 30 years. Rangel works for the Department of Public Safety as a sergeant with the Highway Patrol and has lived in Ward 1 for the past 12 years. See candidate Q&As a week prior to voting this upcoming April. Fort Stockton Community Theater announces performances of Smoke on the Mountain, a musical written by Connie Ray, conceived by Alan Bailey, and directed by Penny Smith. The musical stars local talent Eli Shainfeld as Pastor Mervyn Oglethorpe and the Sanders Family Revival Group, Jody and Randy Day as Vera and Burl Sanders, Sarah and Michael Shuttleworth as Aunt and Uncle Sanders. The show will open in the Nelson Street Theater Friday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. Dinner theater featuring brisket by Shad Shenfeld and potluck dishes provided by the board of directors will be Saturday, March 4th. A Sunday matinee will be held at 2 p.m. on March 5th, and final weekday performances will be March 6th through the 8th at 7 p.m. each day. Tickets are $20 for adults and $15 for seniors and students. Dinner theater tickets, which include dinner and the show, are $30 each and must be prepaid online at fscommunity-theater.org. All tickets are available online for credit card purchase. Tickets at the door are cash or check only. Call 336-3180 for more information. Southwest Marketers was presented the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce February 2023 Business Spotlight on February 13th. Southwest Marketers has been a longtime member of the Chamber of Commerce. Bentley King, owner and manager, went to work for Gene Cummings Oil Company following his service with the United States Navy in 1968. Gene and his wife Florence taught me the fuel distributor business. Gene was my mentor, and they are both great to work for. In 1969, Mr. King became a partner and purchased the business in 1980, changing the name to Southwest Marketers, Inc. Southwest Marketers serves petroleum products to varied customers, including farms, ranches, service companies, and drilling rigs. They also sell propane to commercial and residential customers. They have locations in Fort Stockton, Monahans, and Midland. Mr. King's son, Jim, manages their Midland corporate office and the Monahans location. Southwest Marketers is proud to have many longtime loyal employees with over 30 years of service. Bobby Almanza at the Monahans location has been with the company for 45 years. We appreciate the loyalty of our longtime customers, King added. Low-cost spay-neuter clinic coming March 11th. The once-a-year opportunity for area residents to have cats and dogs fixed, vaccinated, and microchipped at a low cost in Fort Stockton will be on Saturday, March 11th at Big Bend Fix 14. The annual event will take place at the Fort Stockton Convention Center beginning at 9 a.m. The cost to get an animal fixed, a rabies vaccine, and a parvo distemper shot is $150. Microchipping will also be available for $10 per animal. Participating owners must pre-register their animals in order to have their animals fixed or vaccinated. To pre-register, visit Lucky Two Times website at Lucky Two Times Animal Sanctuary. Visit their Facebook page or by calling 432-360-3742. The event is made possible by the Far West Texas Rescue Coalition Vet Team. A big kudos to the city for helping us out with the venue. They have saved us a lot of money for not charging us to use the building. They're playing a big part in what we're doing, said Michael Luna, executive director. Also, thanks to Petco Love, we can offer these important vaccine events at no cost to pet owners. Parvovirus and distemper in dogs and panleukopenia in cats is more prevalent, deadly. The more prevalent deadly diseases affecting pets are preventable with a simple vaccine. An estimated 30% of pet parents do not take their pet to a veterinarian annually for preventive care. To ensure the health and wellness of our beloved pets and address this critical need, Lucky Two Times Animal Sanctuary and advocacy programs are partnered to make pet vaccines free and accessible. Through this national effort, advocacy programs aim to vaccinate 300-plus pets during the event. Lucky Two Times Animal Sanctuary programs helps the helpless animals that are a product of animal cruelty and provides a safe haven for open court cases, providing the necessary care to ensure the survival of animals we take in, resulting in an open animal cruelty case. The organization provides resources to local and state and federal law enforcement. Donations from the community and business alike are helpful and promote the importance of neutering and vaccinating our pets while advocating for pet awareness. Petco Love is a life-changing nonprofit organization that makes communities and pet families closer, stronger, and healthier. Since our founding in 1999, we've empowered animal welfare organizations by investing $330 million in adoption and other life-saving efforts. Our love for pets drives us to lead with innovation, creating tools animal lovers need to reunite lost pets, and lead with passion, inspiring and mobilizing communities and our more than 4,000 animal welfare partners to drive life-saving change alongside us. Visit petlove.org or follow on Facebook. Big shoes to fill. Espino stepped down as board president after 6 years. Growing up in Fort Stockton, Billy Espino entered the education profession over 30 years ago with the goal of making an impactful difference for the youth in the community. It's more than fair to say he accomplished his mission during his 29 years of service. It is an honor and a privilege to have them, the board, select me to serve as board president. Our board has worked very well together and done some things that needed to be done. We made some gains, I feel. Anytime there's a change, there's going to be some controversy, but sometimes you have to do that. Espino's tenure, serving on the school board the past 6 years as president and 9 overall, will be coming to an end this May as the native officially decided to not rerun for his seat. The Fort Stockton native explained his decision to step down, knowing the district will be in good hands moving forward. I think the board will continue to do good things that we've accomplished. The bond that we passed, we got some good things going. and I think they're going to do well. As far as my decision to not seek re-election, it's a personal decision for me and my wife, and last night was a perfect example. We happened to be in Odessa for a doctor's appointment, and we remembered that our grandson was playing in Crane. We found out that the game was at 6:30 and went to the ball game. We were glad we went to the ball games. That's one of the decisions we're able to follow our grandson. We don't know how much time we've got left in the world with my personal issues. I felt it's time I dedicate what time I have left to my family and make time for things me and my wife to do. Espino began his career at the Fort Stockton ISD as a high school assistant principal and a principal at Comanche before serving as the intermediate principal for 18 years. He retired from the district after a 20-year tenure as an administrator with a superintendent certification and counseling certified in hand. Our educational system here has been good as other places. We've been blessed to be a part of it and been proud to be a part of it. There have been a lot of good people that have been a part of it. Espino went on to work for a lariat at 7.5 before years before beginning his 9-year service on the school board. The 6-year school board president said he is not the most proud of any particular accomplishment with the board, but rather the overall impact they've been able to make. The main thing that I want to point out is that we're proud of everything we've done. We've done a lot of things for academics, athletics, kids, and teachers. 4 file for mayor's seat, 3 vie for council place 1, by Sean Yorks. Qualifying for the May 6th municipal election ended last Friday with the impending departure of longtime Mayor Chris Alexander. No less than 4 individuals filed to run for the open mayoral seat. 2 candidates, Jim Warnock and Paul Casillas, are current city council members, while James Wilson and former city council member Pam Palileo also filed. Casillas is the current pro tem. 3 individuals filed for City Council Place 1, Isaiah Rojas, Paul Jerome Chavez, and Mike Stallard, while Place 2 Councilmember Ruben Falcon is running unopposed. Rojas and Stallard also ran for City Council in 2022 and lost, and Palileo did not win her re-election bid for the City Council a year ago. Early voting is scheduled for Monday, April 24th through Tuesday, May 2nd. Election voting day will take place Saturday, May 6th from 7 to 7. Applications for ballots by mail must be requested from and mailed to the Pecos County Clerk's office and received no later than the close of business on April 25th. The city adopted a home rule charter in the November 8th general election, which, among other things, allows the mayor to vote on agenda items and gives the mayor and council 3-year terms of office.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, February 16th. Counts named Citizen of the Year at Chamber Banquet. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Lavelle Counts was named Outstanding Citizen of Monahan's for the 2022 year at the 70th Annual Monahan's Chamber of Commerce Banquet held Monday evening at the Ward County Event Center. Faith Wilson, who was honored with the 2021 Outstanding Citizen Award, presented Lavelle Counts with the award. The Citizen of the Year Award is given to a person in the community that has devoted serving in so many ways and for so many years. Quote, Lavelle Counts married Richard Counts in 1961. They had 2 children, Dennis and Suzanne. Dennis was deceased when he was a freshman in high school. She has 2 grandchildren, Kara and Kendra, 3 great children, twins Bristol and Brecklin, and Briley. Lavelle began her community work in 1965 as part of the Home Demonstration Club in Wickett and WMU. She has been involved in every aspect of church life, from teaching children from ages 4 years to high school students, as well as serving refreshments for and teaching Vacation Bible School. She also has devoted 25 years to the church cooking ministry. Lavelle has been involved in many community organizations, such as American Cancer Society, Youth Against Cancer, Great American Smokeout, Neighbor Walk ACS, Relay for Life, Old Nursing Home, New Nursing Home, GFWC, Tau Lambda Study Club, Lady Lobo Juniorette sponsor, and MOW volunteer serving many of the organizations as an officer. Lavelle is known for all her baking of delicious treats. She provides baked goods for bake sales, farmers market, funerals for FBC and SSBC, Christmas and Chili Market, Cristoval County Festival, and the Women's Division Pie Auction benefiting the Food to Kids program. She will make 10 to 12 different items for the Food to Kids auction, where she wins over $5,000 each year for the program. Lavelle was the cook at the Senior Center for many years and still bakes and delivers pies to the nursing home once a week. It is an honor to present the Citizen of the Year Award to Lavelle Counts, Wilson said. Also at the banquet, First Baptist Church received the Merit Award for 2022. The Women's Division Woman of the Year Award was presented to Robin Irwin, and Monahans High School head swimming coach Jay Thomas was presented the Youth Leadership Award. Council votes to amend solicitor ordinance, lower speed on Highway 18. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. City Council members met on Tuesday for their regularly scheduled meeting, and after establishing a quorum and approving previous minutes, the Council approved the first readings of an amended ordinance regarding solicitors and an ordinance to reduce the speed limit on Highway 18. The first ordinance up for approval was Ordinance 1306, amending Chapter 20 of the Code of Ordinance, Peddlers and Solicitors. Quote, several constituents approached Councilman Jeppy Wilson and Calvin Carroll regarding an out-of-town church group soliciting money at the corner of Seeley and Main Streets, City Manager Rex Thee said. The city does have a permitting plan in place regarding solicitors and vendors, which requires them to fill out an application detailing who they represent, where they will sell, and what product is being sold. Quote, the amended ordinance clearly defines what a solicitor is, the purpose for the funds. We have removed the exemption for religious, nonprofit, or charitable organizations, meaning they will have to go through the application process too, Thee said. Also, the amended ordinance makes it illegal to solicit funds in the roadways. They must remain on the shoulder or sidewalk, cannot enter the roadway, obstruct traffic, create a hazard, or stand in the median. Quote, there is an exception for members of the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department to conduct their annual Fill the Boot campaign, Thee added. The first reading was approved. The second ordinance Council approved on first reading was to reduce the speed on South Highway 18, south of Interstate 20, along a 3.6-mile stretch. Quote, TxDOT recently conducted several speed studies along the stretch of road, and according to the data received, TxDOT has decided to lower the speed limit from 55 miles per hour to 50 miles per hour, but in doing so, they realized there is a small portion of the road inside the city limits which will require council approval, Thee said. The 0.8-mile part of South Highway 18, which is inside city limits, is approximately from 25th Street to 36th Street, but the speed limit change will carry on past the city limits for an additional 2.5 miles. Quote, TxDOT will be responsible for installing and changing all the speed limit signs, Thee added. Along with Thee, Mayor Adam Steen and Council Members Jeppy Wilson, Calvin Carroll, Richard Hawkins, Ivy Valenzuela, and City Attorney Justin Till were all present. Councilman Rudy Hernandez was absent. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the city secretary's office, located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting. Council gives Liquor by the Drink special election green light. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Tuesday, the Monahan City Council unanimously approved the second and final reading of an ordinance to order a special election to allow the sale of liquor by the drink within the city limits. Currently, the city does not allow the sale of mixed beverages unless the establishment is a private club. According to the ordinance, the May 6th ballot will ask voters to answer for or against the question to legalize the legal sale of all alcoholic beverages, including mixed beverages. According to Texas Election Code, in order to call the election, a requester needs 35% of the registered voters who registered as voters in the city who also voted in the 2018 gubernatorial election to sign the petition. Mayor Adam Steen requested the petition pages from the city on October 14, 2022, in order to gather signatures for the local option election. Steen submitted the more than 700 collected signatures to city officials on December 13th. Voters will also be asked to adopt or reject certain proposed amendments to the existing city charter. Thee explained, quote, "The city has been working on updating older language in the city charter, which is now outdated and no longer applies," end quote. There will be 7 amendments to the city charter on the ballot. Anyone wanting to review the amendments can visit the city's website or see them in the city secretary's office. Also on the May 6th general election ballot is District 2 and 3 council seats, as well as the mayor. Currently, Jeppy Wilson represents District 2, and Calvin Carroll represents District 3. As of press time, all incumbents have filed their intent to run for re-election. No other intentions to run have been filed. Deadline to file intent to run is February 17th at 5 p.m. Early voting will begin on April 24th and will run through May 2nd at City Hall. To receive a ballot by mail, applications must be received no later than April 25th. Architect selected for new jail. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners met Monday morning for their regularly scheduled meeting, during which the court agreed to approve a contract with Burns Architecture of Galveston for a conceptual drawing of a new Ward County jail. Quote, "Part one is a fixed fee of $62,000. This is the conceptual part of the planning, the initial part of coming up with what we want and or need. We will have meetings with the sheriff, the planning committee, and the architect over the next 2 months. We will see what the real size of the project is, and then we will move on to the second phase and enter into negotiations again to agree on the final dollar amount of the project. The first phase is a fixed amount. The second phase will be determined by several construction factors, but when the cost is agreed upon, it will not change. It will not be a percentage that fluctuates every time there is a change order," Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. "This is what we call a two-part contract, which is what we recommend to all our clients, which are mainly counties instead of individuals. The first part is what a client needs. This contract is for the sheriff's office, jail, animal shelter, firing range, and vehicle enclosure. When we get this part finished, we will present the second phase to the court for discussion and work toward an agreement on the final cost of the project," Kenny Burns of Burns Architecture said. Another agenda item up for approval was a contract with Playgrounds Etc. for new playground equipment for the small parks throughout the county. Quote, "We have budgeted $50,000 for the small county parks. I have merchandise coming in for the Wicket and Pyote parks, which comes in at $48,800, including freight. we are building much of the playground equipment ourselves, such as swing frames. This does call for half the money up front, which is why I had this put on the agenda for the court to approve, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelm said. The letter of resignation of Ward Memorial Hospital Board Manager Larry Hunt was submitted to the commissioners for approval. Quote, Larry has served this community very well for a great many years and will be missed, Holly said. A 37-item list of surplus salvage and surplus vehicles was presented to the court, tagged to be auctioned to the highest bidder. The exact date of the auction will be published in the Monahans News and will be conducted online on the Ward County website. Also on the agenda was acknowledging the donation to the Sheriff's Office of a rowing machine and AED defibrillator from the Texas Association of Counties. Quote, we were happy to take them so the department can try to get into better condition, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. Declaring a plat printer in the county clerk's office as salvage was also on the agenda. The commissioners gave approval for the printer to be transferred to Van Sant County. A request to accept revised roads in the Thrasher Industrial Subdivision was presented to the commissioners. The commissioners approved the request, designating Thrasher Lane and Ursula Street as county roads. A committee was named to work with the architects and others in design and construction of the new sheriff's office. Quote, my committee member suggestions for the architect committee are Larry Hanna, Sheriff Ferran Valle, Clay Gardner, Ellen Fryer, and Carly Ennis, Holly said. The commissioners agreed with Judge Holly's recommendations and voted to approve the choices. In other regular business, the commissioners approved the past meeting's minutes, the county and hospital budget amendments, the officers' reports, the treasurer's report, and the accounts payable. Present for the Monday meeting were Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Judge Greg Holly. The next commissioner meeting is scheduled for February 27th at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen, at 9:30 a.m. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and asked to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioner's meeting. Odessa man charged with stealing oil from Wicket. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. An Odessa man was arrested late last month after he was allegedly caught stealing crude oil in Wicket last October. Deputies were called to a location 5 miles south of Wicket on October 13, 2022, around 11:15 p.m., in reference to theft of crude oil in progress. Quote, upon deputies' arrival, they discovered Samuel Montes Rodriguez, age 30, of Odessa, was actively stealing crude oil from the location, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. Rodriguez had been terminated the day prior from a trucking company that is contracted with a company out of Wicket to haul crude oil. During the investigation, deputies later learned, quote, Rodriguez stole crude oil on 3 other days in October, Valle added. 3 arrest warrants were issued for Rodriguez's arrest for theft of petroleum, greater than $10,000, less than $100,000, third-degree felonies. Rodriguez was subsequently arrested for the warrants on January 24th. Bond was set at $10,000 for each charge. Rodriguez posted the bond and was released. Additionally, Rodriguez was charged with theft of petroleum less than $10,000, a Class A misdemeanor, on October 13, 2022. Monahans commits to next phase of broadband project. The Monahans Economic Development Corporation and the Monahans City Council unanimously approved an agreement to lease the network infrastructure associated with Phase 1 of the broadband construction to American fiber infrastructure. This is an important next step for the Monahans broadband project that has been in the works for several years and will be completed with American Fiber's funding. The broadband project was initiated by Teresa Burnett, the Chamber Executive Director, in 2017. In 2020, Burnett was awarded the Texas Broadband Hero Award, recognizing her passion, commitment, and determination to close the digital divide in Monahans and its surrounding communities. The project was started with a Federal Economic Development Administration grant and funding from philanthropic organizations and local businesses. The MEDC and Ward County also contributed to the funding. Residents located in the Phase 1 area of the broadband project will be able to sign up for the service in the next 30 days, as announced by Brian Heflin, outgoing president of the Monahans Chamber of Commerce, at their annual awards banquet on Monday evening. On Tuesday, Carol Faulkner, president of Faulkner Consulting, presented a broadband update to the MEDC board and the Monahans City Council. Faulkner's update included an overview of the Indefeasible Right of Use, IRU, agreement between the City of Monahans and American Fiber Infrastructure. Richard Irwin, chairman of the MEDC board, said that they are pleased to have American Fiber's investment in the community and that they are excited about this final step that will allow them to light up the fiber-based network. In December, the MEDC selected Hosted America as the internet services provider for the new network. In the coming weeks, Hosted America will begin a marketing campaign to sign up residential and business customers within the Phase 1 area of the network. Shalom Equipment LLC is currently completing construction of the conduit and handhold infrastructure marked by the orange poles located in the alleyways and streets. The final step in the construction process will be installation of fiber in the underground conduits and connecting the local network to the worldwide internet through a transport network. At this point, residents and businesses can request a connection to the fiber network that will be achieved through drop connections and installation of customer premise equipment. Quote, "With this new development, the Monahans community is looking forward to experiencing high-speed internet, entertainment packages, and telephony services. This is a significant step in closing the digital divide in the community and is expected to impact surrounding areas and regions," Faulkner said.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.